You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, spirit, earth, community, and economy. All six areas of the Healthful Living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living, and I'm a Healthful Living advocate. And let me tell you a little bit more about what that means. Today's show, we're going to be speaking about the big picture, the broader picture, the most important picture, essentially the nature of our reality. What's going on in our world today? I mean that from a bigger sense of not just looking at the headlines or reading, you know, the news or watching your TV and asking what's going on in our world today, like an old person would go, tisk, 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 our world. But that same sort of tisk-tisk sentiment from a larger, broader perspective. There seems to be a significant division occurring. We've been talking about it for many years now. Polarization, as it's being said. People stepping one way or the other, whether it's to the left, to the right, whether it's Democrat, Republican, whether it's those who believe in global warming and those who refute it, whether it's those who are optimists or those who are pessimists. Whether it's those who feel it's worthwhile to pay for organic or those who don't think it could make any difference. And whether it's those who look at the evidence of things, take it into their own minds and make considerations, or those who put their energy into refuting evidence and saying, no, that's not the case. But no matter where we look, there seems to be some sort of division taking place. And this has fascinated me for all of my life, how it is that there can be such completely different takes on the world. So many of us have been through self-help programs, learning such. I mean, no matter what it was that we've been doing to improve ourselves, we've learned that notion somewhere that that teaches us that, you know, we are responsible for what happens. And some people just don't truly embody that. What is that thing that defines us? What are the two? I mean, I just keep seeing it this way, and I'm going to get some help on this with our guest today, but there just seems to be something that defines humanity when we take us down to the core level of how we tend to view things. And we've learned that it's not about the events that happen in life, but about how we interpret those events. Well, clearly that must be the case. Just last evening, I was having yet again a discussion about optimists or pessimists. And those who believe and those who don't believe. And it just seems to come down to two different things for me, two significantly different paradigms. And I have been very fortunate to connect with a gentleman who knows quite a lot about these two paradigms. It has been a significant component of his life's work over the past many years. And he has been studying what, along with what we have been observing and paying attention to in our own lives, an expansion of consciousness, a change that's occurring in our world. An awakening of some sorts that people seem to be going through right now about becoming more aware of their reality, becoming more aware of the world that they are creating and deciding to be a little more a choice about what they're going to create from this point forward. It's happening all over the place. People are becoming more in tune with their bodies. Many people are working out. The yoga phenomenon is through the roof. Holistic healthcare, organic foods. I mean, we can see it all over the place that a lot of people are saying, hey, I want to be more conscious. Yet, at the same time, there's a whole onslaught of people saying, no, you can't prove that being that way is worthy or that it makes any difference. So since you can't prove it to me, I'm not going to engage. What's going on there? Our guest, Mark Kimmel, I'm going to bring him on the line in 2 seconds. I know he's anxious to get on with me. He is the author of several books, most notably for me anyway, at least the most that moved me was his book, Creating the Cosmic Paradigm. He's studied messages from the cosmos for many, many years, and he gets to the heart of the matter, presents a really enlightening vision for the future. Mark has a very interesting background. I'd like to have him explain a little bit of that when he comes on the line. He was a venture capitalist for many years. He was involved in the startup of many, many companies. He has degrees in engineering, marketing, finance, and psychology, and I turn now to a colleague and friend Mark Kimmel to help me and us understand a broader perspective of what's going on in our world and our reality today. Welcome to the show, Mark. I hope you're with me.
I am here, and it's my great pleasure to be here, Martin. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. I just feel that we're in such a compelling time of change and possibility for all of us, for collective humanity, to be very blunt, that we're living in a phenomenal time of change. It's been prophesied by all major groups on the planet. Yet here we are now, actually in 2007, and a lot of things are going on.
We live in exciting times. We do indeed. I appreciate your earlier comments, because I do see this, the bifurcation, if you will, of our world. And it troubles me greatly in some respects, and yet it's very hopeful in other respects. I do see lots of people awakening, but at the same time, I see a majority of people saying, no, I really don't want to go there.
Right, it's too scary.
You know, the amount of organic food, for instance, that's purchased versus regular old stuff you can get anywhere, is still a relatively it's growing. I mean, it's, every year there's more of it, and it's better, and there's more variety and everything else. But it's still a relatively small number of people that are going that direction.
Sure.
And I'm not sure that's the ultimate gauge of everybody's orientation. I think maybe a better gauge might be, a much harder one to measure, of course, is, well, what are they really thinking about?
Mm.
You know? And this doesn't really, in my mind, come down to politics as much as it does to, you know, are we open to looking at all of these new things? Or are we just really digging our heels in and saying, no, as you pointed out, there is no global warming. Things really are just fine. We're just going through one of those periodic business cycles.
Mm.
And everything will, you know, just wait a couple years. Everything will be fine. You'll see. And we'll come out of this, or even so and so far as say, hey, what problems? I don't see any problems in my life. And looking at this this larger reality, what larger reality? You know, if you can't touch it, feel it, smell it, measure it, whatever, it doesn't exist. And so this is a discussion I have almost every day with someone. I'm out writing books, a new book that I just published. It's not even available in the bookstores yet. Should be out there in, 3 or 4 weeks, Birthing a New Civilization, which really cuts to exactly what we wanted to talk about today, which is we are in the throes of creating something new on this planet, something brand new that hasn't been done before. It's not a going back to the good old days. No, we can't go back. We have to keep moving forward, and we don't have a choice. We just simply have to go forward, because if we stay with where we are right now, in my mind at least, we are slowly devolving as opposed to evolving.
Now, clearly, Mark, you and I were supposed to meet. I mean, we are of similar. There's something completely similar that we have inside of us that I feel is that I've always described as innately human. I mean, understanding things this way, being this way, allowing one's self to be open. You touched very much on the key point, as I've always explained it, is this notion of openness. Are we allowing ourselves to be open to all possibility or not? And there are factors that influence how we've learned or become to be one way or another, and that's, you know, multiple shows of discussion. And I've known since, I've felt since I was, and I can recall pretty clearly, you know, 5 or 6 years old, pondering a far bigger picture, wondering if in the way that I had for my school experiment, a shoebox with some ants in it, you know, and a little kind of minuscule world going on down there, I imagine, gee, I wonder if, you know, all of the Earth is, you know, inside of a, you know, I was perceiving it in that sort of a way, and have always been curious about what, you know, what's larger, what's bigger, what's broader. So before we really delve into this a little bit more, I'd like you to share with our listeners a little bit more about your background, because it is quite unique. It is, I mean, it's very broad and fascinating that brings you to this study today, so that people can kind of understand, you know, who's speaking with them today.
Well, first of all, my background is really different than yours. Because I grew up very conventionally, very conservatively. I grew up in a family that really didn't tolerate a lot of unconventional thinking. And so very early, I got put into this box of this is the way you're supposed to behave. We want you to go out and be marvelously successful, but this is where we want you to be successful. So I got directed into a business career, and I worked for a couple of major corporations. Now, I was always kind of at the fringe of those corporations in that I was doing new business development, new product development, new ideas, and that type of thing. But nonetheless, I was in that business world and was doing my damnedest to be a success there. And then I moved into the venture capital world and spent about 20 years in venture capital, had one of the largest funds here in Colorado in venture capital. And we had at one time investments in 50 different companies and three different funds. And, I was sitting on boards of directors all over the country and spending 3 or 4 days every week on the road, flying around, attending board meetings, solving problems, investing in new deals. And so I was living that life that I used to call life in the laser lane, which is, an adrenaline rush every moment. And then in 1987, I basically got a tap on the shoulder that said, okay, enough of that. You've got to now completely change yourself from where you are, and we want you to be over in this other arena, which is the one that is open to the larger reality, that is looking at things from a human standpoint. And so I began this process in 87. I really didn't understand it. All I knew was there was something that was going on. My business partners picked up on it real quick because they said, Mark, you've lost your edge. You're no longer the ego with the blood on the beak type of person. And so in 96, I left that business career of mine totally. Dismissed all of my investments, my board, and all that type of thing, and went back to school to get a degree in psychology, not knowing exactly where I was headed. Well, all of a sudden, I find out there's this other side of the world. Hey, these people actually care about each other. They're not trying to take advantage of each other. They actually care. And so that was a real eye-opener. And then I was a year into that process and sitting down doing an academic paper. And one day, out of my typewriter comes this first book of mine. Now, I had no intentions of writing a book. I never had any lifelong ambition about doing that or anything else, let alone a book that's in story format. And so it took me several years to go and to understand what that was all about. Went back and took courses on how to write dramatic prose and all this type of thing. But the characters were fixed in that initial thing that came out of the initial manuscript, if you want to call it that. It was too crude, in my mind now, looking back, to be called a manuscript. But the characters were set, the ideas were set, the plot was set, that type of thing. And then I had the opportunity to go out into the field with a group of wonderful people and began to see my first UFOs, and oh my gosh, we went that first week I was out with that crowd. We went and saw UFOs every night, and this is with no preparation, no nothing, just stark, a bunch of curious people going out into the field. There were 40 of us, and that first night we're out in the field, and all of a sudden I see four squares in the sky, perfectly formed squares, kind of a light yellow color, as if a freight train had come by or a passenger train had come by and somebody had flipped open the windows all of a sudden. And it's like, whoa, what's that doing up there? And so it went on and on from that to where we actually had an ET craft sit down next to us. So that was exciting. And then I go back and I look at the book. I didn't have to change anything. So I don't know where all of that first book came from.
And your first book being?
The name of the first book is Trillion.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually published it in 2000 and came out in early 2002. The second book, Decimal, came out, which is a follow-in, came out in 2004. The book you referred to earlier, Creating the Cosmic Paradigm, in 2005. And this latest one, Birthing a New Civilization, is just out now.
Now, you're speaking of an experience. You've had experiences that brought you, for lack of a better term, awake. I mean, you had a shift, yeah? Something happened in you that you completely shifted your perspective of the world, whereas earlier you had been, you know, stuck in a paradigm of, you know, competition and that the way to be is to step over others, or that, you know, resources are scarce and you have to live in that kind of competitive environment. And the other was, well, wait a minute. Perhaps if people really worked together to get along, if we looked at things from a human perspective, it'd be a completely different way of being. Do you get a sense that that's that type of shift is what's happening today? Are people waking up to that now? Are they?
I think what's happening today is that, you know, we're having experiences of UFOs, and they seem to be increasing if you look at it on a worldwide basis. And that's happened increasingly over the last few years. My opinion, and I think it's shared by some of the people, you know, other people that are doing research into this, is that the ETs are here. They're trying to go and just crack the door a little bit so people will wake up and say, golly, gee, hey, maybe there's something else going on here, rather than getting up, going to work, coming home, popping a beer and, you know, watching TV. Maybe there's something more going on here. Hey, maybe I better wake up a little bit and maybe these crazy people that I run into every now and then, maybe they really have something to say. So I think that's the purpose of these UFO sightings. And, you know, we now have the government of France that has decided to post all of their experiences from a government standpoint with UFOs and ETs for the last 50 years. And that now is available on the Internet. So you can go over there and open that up. When they first posted it, it got overwhelmed and it blew the server. But I think it's back up and running now. So you can go and find out. Anybody can do this, you know? And here's 50 years worth of experiences. Mm. And the Brits have come clean about Rendlesham, and the folks down in Brazil have said, we're going to post our stuff, and the folks in Mexico. I was down in Costa Rica a couple of years ago, and I got off the airplane and had three newspaper interviews back-to-back, and I was on TV that night. And what was amazing about that was that the people that I thought were going to be interviewing me were telling me about their experiences. Mm. So here's these editors and reporters. They wanted to talk about their experiences.
Well, it seems to me that this, I mean, whether it's the UFO, quote, phenomena, or so many other areas of our world, information cannot be suppressed forever. Reality cannot be suppressed forever. Eventually, we're going to start getting this data, integrating it, and those of us that are willing to look at it for what it is will begin to make, you know, larger conclusions and assertions and assessments based on that data, and integrate that into our current knowing of reality and proceed with that information. Whereas, again, others will just simply say, oh, there's nothing there, therefore we have to assume it's nothing, even though there's a 80% correlation. We'll assume there's nothing and hope that it's all going to be okay. Not exactly a camp that I think we are in, but the thing is, whether it's the UFO phenomenon or so many others, and really it's across the spectrum of all areas of the healthful living model, I must say, whether it's health of our body or mind or clearly the earth, we've got data, significant information telling us one thing, and it's just bubbling up all over the place, yet a lot of people are saying, you know, putting all their effort into saying, no, you know, you have to refute that. Don't believe that. Don't believe what your senses are telling you. I mean, we're really in this significant challenge between these two completely different paradigms. And can we come back to that just for a little bit about the existing paradigm and the larger reality coming?
Well, let's do that, because I think now, since I was totally immersed in that old paradigm, the conventional paradigm, if you will, or actually I call it the elitist paradigm, because in that old paradigm, we're taught to look up to the leaders that are going to tell us, you know, the way it is. And, of course, the media plays a piece in that, and science plays a piece in that. And even our history, you know, all says, well, we have to look up, and those are the models, and at least in this country, we are supposed to climb up, claw our way to the top. That's the ideal. And so it's a very elitist kind of thing that there's a few people up there at the top, and then there's all the other people, you know, way down below here. It's, you know, a socioeconomic pyramid, if you will, but that's a little cold. But that's the conventional reality, and then there's all of these other things, and it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, all of the people now that are waking up to the reality of our political circumstances and all of the truth that's coming out there. Are people waking up to the fact that, hey, there are other ways to heal my body other than just taking drugs, that I actually might be able to be proactive in this whole process and be healthy and seek to be healthy rather than just putting Band-Aids on things when I get sick.
Mm.
And then the whole belief thing. You know, we see our conventional religions really digging their heels in because they are feeling that, well, people are waking up and they're challenging us. And, well, my gosh, they've never done that before in several thousand years. And then, you know, the whole economics thing. We had this this video that came out. What was the one? There's so many of these out, you know.
You're thinking of From Freedom to Fascism.
Well, yes. You know, there's all these videos now that are showing that, well, you know, our whole economic system is basically a lie. So the truth is coming out, and all of a sudden people are beginning to see that the lives that they are leading are crumbling. Mm. Well, that's a very frightening thing. Oh, my God, you know, this thing that I have dedicated myself to, like I've been in the business world for 30-some years, it was like, oh, that whole paradigm that I was living, that's not the way it has been.
Right.
Because we were taught growing up, oh, well, this is the way it's always been, you know? There's always been the elites up at the top of the pyramid, and then there's all the other people down. Everybody kind of fits in their nice little pigeonhole, and everybody behaves, and we all get along just fine.
Well, and then change becomes so fearful.
Because
we become attached to the way things are and our addictions of the status quo, and regardless of whether or not they're serving us. And in fact, that question of whether or not they're serving us, we have forgotten to ask because we're too busy just working. So eventually, when we realize that, you know, the water in the pot is getting hotter and hotter, so to speak, and we have to jump out, we don't will have that willingness or that energy to do so, and it becomes so fearful. People are afraid to change.
Well, and I look back on my prior life, and I see that, you know, basically it was all fear-based.
Mm.
It was based on the fear that I might not be successful, the fear that I might not have enough money, the fear that I might not be good enough, the fear that, there's some bad guys out there that might take it all away from you if you ever did become successful. The fear that you might screw up somehow or the other, and what terrible things could happen to you if that happened. You know, the fear that you might get sick, the fear that just on and on and on and on. And the majority of people are driven by this fear to the point that change becomes just another fear, and it's like, I can't handle anymore. I got enough. I can't do it.
On your website, you've got several quotes from, I'm guessing, collective individuals that represent both paradigms, either the existing paradigm or a larger cosmic reality. I want to read a few of these from the existing paradigm. One says here, I'm not willing to open myself to the possibility that there is something more, a larger reality. What if I can't handle it? What if people think I'm crazy? Besides, I'm real busy. Global warming, where's the scientific proof? It's just a normal cycle for the planet. Besides, we're a minor influence. The Earth has built-in mechanisms to clean itself. I think this world's in pretty good shape. The problems people talk about are exaggerated. Oh, here's a good one. God is in charge. He told us to dominate the earth, so it's okay what I'm doing. Besides, he is so powerful, he'll take care of everything if I just believe.
Don't you just love those?
Boy. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here's kind of a that really gets into that fear mindset. There's all kinds of nasty things that can happen to you. Maybe just around the next corner. It pays to be real careful and watch what you're doing and what somebody else might do to you. You just can't be too careful. I hear that one a lot. I hear that one a lot, perpetuated often in families. And you know, you can't trust anybody. No one's going to, you know, you can't trust anyone. You have to be fearful of everyone. You can never, no one's ever going to love you more than your family. And even though, you know, their love is being completely conditional, and as long as you behave the way that you want them to, they'll love you, but that's a whole different show. But people learn this. And one just comment is that we learn to teach it to ourselves, to keep ourselves in the stuck perspective. What I call psychological cancer, phrases like, don't get your hopes up. People are told, don't get your hopes up. And I translate that into, well, someone's telling us, don't engage your own habitual thoughts and patterns and expectations such that you might put all of your energy and actions into causing an outcome that you yourself initiated. Because if you did that, then you might realize that you have infinite power to create all kinds of stuff when you put your concerted focus, thoughts, energy, emotions, feelings into something and work towards it. And if you did that, you wouldn't need me.
It's so much better to be dependent on me, right? I'll tell you how to do it. You know, you don't need to think for yourself. Oh, I mean, these are indeed things that we've all, I think, encountered at one time or another. And there, I think, and this is the thing that took me so long to get in touch with, coming out of my background, is that to see the false behind each one of these statements. Because when you, and I can sympathize with people who live their daily lives thinking, you know, that one you just talked about, you know, you can't be too careful. And there are so many people like that. And I can sympathize with them because I have been there thinking like that. Okay, and I understand, and all I can say to them is that, look, there is another way to look at this reality, and even if you don't come over here, you at least owe it to yourselves to take a peek. Just peek at it, and it really isn't quite as scary as you might think it is.
You have some quotes there from the mindset of the larger reality, a broader cosmic paradigm here, that one that says, being a victim is an illusion. We are totally responsible for our actions. By taking responsibility, we can create an experience we choose. By joining with others of similar mind, we can change the world. Due to our misuse of technology and our addiction to violence, this planet is on a path of self-destruction. When altruism underlies our technology, then we can find its highest use. When common people decide that they have had enough, then violence will cease. We might be living more comfortably than before, but are we really treating each other better today than 1,000 years ago? You know, when I read these, I just, you know, they so resonate with me, and I feel that they're innately human expressions, and I become inside a little uncomfortable at the notion of interacting with someone whose perspective is completely antithetical. It just frustrates me. And you know, how can we work with that? Any ideas?
I've had the opportunity recently to interact with some people that have spent time and also are a part of some of the indigenous cultures. And, you know, we've been taught that these are just primitive people, right? They don't compare in any way, shape, or form to our modern culture. And yet these cultures are based in love. At least that's my experience, in that they're based in love, they're based in community, they're based in extended family. Those are values, you know, that we have lost. And so I keep coming back to, okay, why have we lost those things? And it took me a long time, having come out of that old paradigm, to look back at it and say, okay, what happened here? Why is this happening? And Martin, this is somewhere I did not want to go. But I have slowly come to the understanding that some of that old paradigm is not just happenstance, that it is actually orchestrated to our detriment.
Hmm.
And so, you know, now I'm going to be, you know, another conspiracy theorist.
Well, we welcome that on our show because we don't call it that. We simply call it the nature of what it is, which is looking at hard evidence of what's going on and putting pieces together to help ourselves.
Yep. And so I look at this and I look at it, and it took me, I started in 87. It took me basically 20 years to get comfortable with the idea that, maybe some of this conventional paradigm is being orchestrated to the benefit of the people up at the top of the paradigm, because they're the ones that seem to be getting most of the goodies out of this.
Mm.
You know, this is a competitive environment, and they seem to be winning the game all the time. How does this perpetuate itself for years and years and years? What's going on here? And so I explored that whole thing, and have some friends that have spent a lot of time looking at this. And if you go back in history, you find out that these, I'll call it the socioeconomic pyramid, because that one's one I think that everybody can understand. It existed in the Middle Ages with the kings and the knights and the dukes and all this kind of stuff. There was this beautiful pyramid. It existed back in the times of Egypt and other historical times. It's like, what's going on here? So apparently there's a model somewhere that got infused in our psyche that said, well, it's better off to have this pyramid, and most of you people are going to be the victims, and those of us on top are the divine right of kings, and, you know, the people up here, we've got a right to be up here, and you don't have any rights, so you're down there.
Mm.
It took a long time for me to get there, because in this country we're taught, you know, well, anybody can be anywhere. There aren't very many people that come from the bottom and make it to the top. Not very many, when you really look at it.
No one ever wants to acknowledge or admit that they have been manipulated. I mean, to do so in any circumstance, or to have to face a reality that shows up after we have been in denial of circumstances, is very painful. I mean, we don't want to have to address the fact that we were involved in its creation and its sustenance all this time, that we played a role in that. And it's very, we have more forces inside of us that will protect us from that self-inflicted pain than even to break through it, you know, rip the Band-Aid off, even though it could, you know, we always know it's going to be better in the end once we break through the pain of all of that. But there's such force that we have that inhibits us. And I hear you speaking of your story, and I am certain that so many people are out there, you know, struggling in their own minds to, you know, constantly cling, you know, to the old way, constantly cling to some shred of denial that, oh, no, this can't be true. And there's such forces inside of them, and I just, you know, wish that I can find ways to, you know, make it such that we can, you know, be more all right with each other about talking about these things, about opening up our minds, about just embracing one another when we do make a shift to welcome one another to a broader perspective. Because, you know, we're just inhibiting each other if we remain with our judgments. And I think we're living in a time where that's becoming increasingly possible, and that people can locate and find one another who are feeling and sensing and being the same way. We know it in our inner selves, and we go through time and we learn more to trust that part of ourselves.
You know, the only way that I have found to really help people ultimately figure this thing out is to approach it from the standpoint that everything is energy, that we are here, we are basically energy, these bodies of ours are energy, that I am a spirit having a bodily experience, and that ultimately if I begin to see everything as energy, then slowly I can begin to tell people and convince them that, oh, well, maybe there aren't these rigid boundaries to everything, and not everything is black and white, and it's much more fluid. And maybe, just maybe, I might be a little more powerful and have more control over my life than I think I do. Particularly if I step back and say, huh, so I'm a spirit having a bodily experience, and, you know, I really can have some control over my reality. You alluded to it before, is that it's the way in which we react to these outer circumstances that really determines who we are. It's that way of looking at the larger reality is the only way I think we have of getting through this to where we can actually create what I like to call a whole new civilization. Because until we can see ourselves in a fundamentally different way, as long as we see ourselves caught up in the competitive, pyramidal, hierarchical, science-based, defined by beliefs, media junkies, you know, as long as we're over there, everything has rigid boundaries. Once we move over to the other side, things become more fluid. And it's in that fluidity that I think there's hope.
What I find interesting is that these notions that we're speaking of, this either current existing paradigm of scarcity or a broader, larger comprehension of the nature of the universe and life and abundance, it seems to play out in us, again, between, you know, we're each oriented one way or the other. And this goes, I mean, psychologists have been studying this phenomenon for years, going back into the early 60s with the locus of control research that was done. Some people have an internal locus of control and a belief that what they do affects what shows up in their outer reality. Other people tend to score towards what's called an external locus of control, that their overall paradigm is one where it's mostly things outside of them that affect what's going on in the world, both, you know, in their bodies, in their lives, I mean, everything. And it's really extremely fundamental perspective, because in the research that I've done, I've looked at how it is that internal people tend to be healthier, tend to get sick less, tend to be happier, and I mean, in multiple domains across the spectrum of life. And it's so interesting that today we're finding these notions playing out on such grand scale with respect to how human beings view and create everything in our world, everything in our world. And in your book, Creating the Cosmic Paradigm, you present people 10 focuses, or foci, as they are called, for creating a cosmic paradigm. I don't know if I put you on the spot here, but can we speak about a few of those?
Let's do it. Let me grab the book real quick.
Okay. While you grab the book, I will let people know that the book is called Creating the Cosmic Paradigm. I believe they can get it through your website, which is...
Just happen to have a copy here.
Great. It's cosmicparadigm.com. And on the back of the book it reads, "Planet Earth is at the critical juncture in its history. We are being urged to awaken, to transform our world into a veritable paradise, and to join with the other inhabited planets of this galaxy. Discover what this transformation will look like. Learn the 10 steps you can take to be part of that process." And step number one begins right now, in the few seconds after you're taking in the information that I just read. And whatever reaction or response your mind or your subconscious or your being is having to the words that I read regarding inhabited planets of this galaxy, you know, that's your own data and wonder, gee, where did I get that? Where is that coming from? Where's my own focus? Where's my consciousness? Is it one of completely constricted, only this is possible minimization? Or are you completely open in your mind to taking in all data, all information, knowing that that is there to serve your perspective only, your paradigm, your view? So, let's look at the book. Boy, Mark.
Just a comment.
Yes, please.
You know, we're being bombarded every day by, and I realize that I'm on the radio, but the mainstream media is doing a wonderful job of keeping us into that external reality as the source of all truth, because they obviously want to, you know, make themselves into the source of that so they can sell more advertising. That, to me, along with Hollywood and television and so on, is the thing that keeps people focused on the external. So, having said that, let's go with focus number one.
Okay.
So what I present in focus number one is a picture of the way in which the world could be, which is, of course, the other side of this. It's the opposite of where we are now. And I have moved in this newer book to a little bit further elaboration on this whole thing. But if we could go and get to a place where people simply focused their attention from love rather than fear, that would be an enormous shift, just an enormous shift. Because as long as we are these fear-based, you know, we're not going to do it.
Right. Everyone knows that a decision or a choice made in fear is never as powerful as one made in a more grounded,
that's right,
open perspective.
That's right. And but in order to get to that love-based place, we kind of have to have a vision of what would that mean. So what's presented here with focus number one is a picture that some people might say, oh, well, that's just utopia. Except what we don't understand, and I refer back to these indigenous peoples, whether it's the Lakota or people in Fiji, or whether it's the Mayans down in Central America, or some of the indigenous tribes over in Africa, we see what is portrayed by the media as a very dark side, always, the violence and all this type of thing. What we don't see are these societies beneath the surface who are living a love-based existence. And so, yes, do I paint a picture of utopia in this book? Sure. But that doesn't mean that we can't achieve that.
Well, I think the point that you also make there very strongly is that simply by allowing ourselves to envision, we always draw more from ourselves and from our experience.
That's it. Oh, yes. Yeah, we do. And if we don't have, you know, the ability to imagine, which happens to be one of our most powerful tools, our imagination, if we cannot imagine a larger, better existence, then we get thrown back into the existences defined by the mainstream media.
Mm.
Over and over and over. Just look at the movies. I mean, they just pound this into our heads. So I'm very hopeful, because now that these books are out there, I'm beginning to see people that are saying, you know, Mark, maybe, just maybe, there's a possibility we could create something like that. Here in Colorado, where I live, we are putting together a community. And I'm working on this when I'm not on the radio or writing books and so on. We're putting together a community of people that want to go and live this community-based idea of love.
Right, right.
And it can be done.
Yep. And it's not an airy-fairy thing. It's just simply a paradigm, a perspective of being consciously involved in all of the things that we're affecting and creating. I mean, everything that we do in our lives has an impact somewhere downstream, whether it's how much electricity we're using, the kind of relationships that we're creating, what we're putting in our body every day, where we're spending our money, all affects things downstream. And we're learning now that we have, the connections between what we do and downstream and the ability of ourselves to connect with other like-thinking people to affect, you know, broader systems that thus affect us. And it's just an incredible time of opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm amazed. I'm absolutely amazed at the number of people that all of a sudden are stepping forward and saying, hey, I'll be part of that.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not talking about some hippie commune here. We're talking about people that have, a very solid hold on life that are saying, you know, I'm not going to continue to live in this old paradigm. I'm looking for something different. And if that means joining together in a sustainable community of some sort, hey, let's go do that.
Right, right.
Because we can support each other.
And folks can learn more about the Cosmic Paradigm Network, is it, at your website?
The Cosmic Paradigm Network, yes. You can find that on page one of that site, cosmicparadigm.com. Now, a lot of people have trouble spelling paradigm, so there's an alternate way to get there, and it's UFO-truth, TRUTH.com, UFO-truth.com. It gets you there, too.
Right. And we've only got about 5 minutes left, and I knew this was going to happen, Mark, so we're going to have to obviously schedule multiple more times to connect. But focus number three in the book, Creating the Cosmic Paradigm, which folks will pick up on your website, understanding that you're a powerful mixture of physical and non-physical. And you ask the question here, when was the last time you allowed your true self to run your life?
Oh, don't you like that one?
Powerful question. I mean, I think that question alone is, you know, provokes a lot of introspection with respect to understanding these two paradigms and helping ourselves to remember the choice that we have over, you know, our own orientation. Is that notion of, you know, are we really at the helm of our lives?
Or are we allowing other people to define who we are?
Mm.
How many people, and, you know, you have experience with this in your practice, and I have experience because I get around and talk to a lot of people. Most people, they're looking for some leader. They're looking for somebody else to define who they are, rather than really looking inside ourselves. You know, if on a very big picture, we have all the knowledge within us, we really don't have to go. And we don't have to buy books. We don't have to do anything. All we have to do is get to that center, and it's all there. It really is. And that's so hard for people to trust, that they actually might know something on their own and be willing to go and trust that enough to go and just take one small little step and say, oh, you know, maybe that little conscious thing that said, maybe I shouldn't do this, maybe I ought to listen to that for a change.
And bolstering that trust in ourselves to take that action is surrounding ourselves with others who are doing the same thing, others who are also reaching out and opening themselves to broader possibilities and connections with others in community. I mean, this is really how we're applying our newly remembered consciousness of how to be and create a sustainable world. So it becomes increasingly necessary for us to, you know, identify one another and those who are thinking and orienting and directing themselves in the same way, and businesses that are doing that, and all systems, so that we can be, you know, doing our best to create whatever utopia is for you, whatever that vision is for you in your mind. It's always more powerful to be oriented towards it and to connect with others who are at least looking in the same direction.
I tell people that the path to this new civilization, to this larger reality, is a very difficult path. It's not easy. It's not easy to be out of step with the majority. And it's a whole lot easier if you can find some other like-minded people to walk that path with. And so I would encourage people to, you know, we've got over 500 people now on this Cosmic Paradigm Network. And if you look at what we do on a daily basis, it's basically holding in our hearts the idea that there is the possibility of this better world.
Mm.
It's that simple. It's that simple. That's you know, it's not easy, but it's simple.
It is simple, and we implore all of our listeners to hold on to that possibility in their hearts and in their minds and whatever that means to them, to hold on to that every day. Mark, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I always wish we had more time, but this is going to be it for today. I've been connecting with Mark Kimmel. He is the author of multiple books, and you can read about him and all of his work at cosmicparadigm.com. I want to thank you, Mark, for sharing your stories today, your background, your personal experience, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon. And is there any other way that folks can get in contact with you if they want to?
Well, I think the best thing is the website. It's a very popular website, but there's plenty of room for other visitors there. And, Martin, it's been my great pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy, what an incredible show. I just want to say to all of you, you can hear the show again at realitysandwichradio.com, and you can connect in with Mark Kimmel at cosmicparadigm.com. And it's always our intent here at Reality Sandwich to talk about things in ways that are hopefully innately curious to all of us, to just take in information and data about the nature of our world and experiences before us, so that we can empower our individual selves with more knowledge, more information, more data, so that we can then just put that into our minds, into our bodies, and have that then just subtly influence the choices we make about really everything that we interact with in our lives. And I believe wholeheartedly that if we can be, you know, working on that really forever, since it is a lifelong process, that we're always going to be, in simple terms, happier, healthier, more productive, more successful, more fulfilled, whatever that is, that if we can just learn to connect with others who also have that same orientation, the world will be a better place. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. This has been Reality Sandwich. Thanks for listening.